Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, things go better with Coca-Cola, things go better with Coke. Life is much more fun when you're refreshed. And Coke refreshes you best. It's the refreshing.
That's an example of a great TV commercial. Great because it's unforgettable and because it worked. Coke consistently outsells its biggest rival, Pepsi, even though Pepsi routinely scores better in blind taste tests. But if people actually prefer Pepsi, why do they buy Coke? It's one of the mysteries of advertising, and why some very big companies are now hiring neuroscientists to help out with their marketing, using brain scans to see how we respond to various products and pitches. Danish neurobiologist Lone Frank reports on this trend in her book, Mindfield. She told Steve Paulson that some people are hoping neuromarketing is their ticket to mega profits.
In marketing, you have a billion-dollar industry that is very unscientific and that is wasting an awful lot of money. So if you could get some answers, you know, directly from people's brains about what they're going to buy, what they're not going to buy, that would save you an awful lot of money and give you an edge in the market.
And yet, marketers do all kinds of research right now. They do focus groups. They do all kinds of product tests. What don't they understand?
Well, the thing is, if you do focus groups, for example, you will put a lot of people together in a room. You will ask them questions about a product or whatever it is. And you get all kinds of group dynamics going. And it turns out that you can't really trust what people tell you. They will be affected by some kind of atmosphere in that group or that day or whatever. And later, you put it on the market and you see that the focus groups just weren't right. People aren't buying it.
So when neuromarketers come in, now these are people who actually do brain scans and try to pinpoint what is actually happening in people's brains as they are, I suppose, thinking about a product. What parts of the brain are they looking at?
What is actually going on in neuromarketing are several things. You can perhaps look at how do you get people to identify with a product, for example, because we know there are areas of the brain that are becoming active when you think about something that has to do with yourself and your identity. So if that kind of area lights up when you look at a product or you talk about a product, then that's a good indication that, oh, you have identification here. You can also look at areas that have to do with learning and memory. Say you have a trailer for a movie. You want to show this trailer to a bunch of people, a test audience, and you want to know, are they going to remember this trailer when the movie comes out in 3 months?
You were suggesting that there might be a certain part of the brain, maybe more than one, that deals with someone's identity. And I suppose the secret there is to somehow associate a particular product with what makes someone feel good about themselves.
Yes, yes.
What part of the brain is that?
Well, you have parts of the medial frontal cortex that will engage and get active when you think about something that has to do with yourself, your life, everything that surrounds you.
Which is really all about branding, right? I mean, that's the magic ticket in marketing these days is to create a positive image for and a memorable image for a particular product.
Yes, something you want to be associated with as a person. Like you want to have an iPod because that is so cool or whatever it is.
There's a classic study about branding, what's known as the Pepsi paradox. Can you explain that?
Yes, it was actually the study that launched neuromarketing some years ago. It was a researcher, Clinton Kilt, who wanted to look into what was already known as the Pepsi paradox, which is that Pepsi is less successful than Coca-Cola. It has been, you know, forever and probably it will be forever. But it's interesting that when you ask people to blind taste these two drinks, Coke and Pepsi, you will always have more people preferring Pepsi to Coke when you just ask for the taste. But if you have the labels on, you know, more people will say that they prefer Coke. So that has to be the branding effect. But Clinton Kilt was interested in, okay, how does that play out in the brain? So he put some people in the scanner and asked them to blind taste these two brown sugary drinks. And when you get a drink, a sugary drink, you get activity in parts of the brain that are in the reward system. It's nice to get a sugary drink. So you have activity in the caudate putamen. And in this experiment, you had more people preferring the taste of Pepsi. And you had a bigger activity in this area in the reward system with Pepsi than with Coke. So then you unveiled to people when they were drinking Coke, when they were drinking Pepsi, and what you saw was that you had this area that we talked about, the self-identification area in the medial frontal cortex, that would come in, be active when people knew, I'm drinking Coke now, and they liked the idea of drinking Coke, and that would sort of play out in the brain in the way that it would modulate that taste experience that was going on in the caudate putamen. So you have areas in the brain really modulating each other, and you could say branding is really your cortex tricking your reward system.
Hmm. Now, do people know why Coke has done such a great job of branding?
No. we can just see that they have. They have succeeded.
Well, I mean,
they got your frontal medial cortex.
Pepsi's sort of stuck here, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Apparently has the better product, but it's almost as if they can't do anything about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's sad. It's sad to be Pepsi.
Now, does neuromarketing have much of a track record so far, or is it so new that we really cannot assess its success?
It's pretty new. It dates back to 2004, and it hasn't been very exposed in scientific journals. It mostly goes on in private companies. And some scientists will tell you that a lot of it is pretty much unscientific. So there is a lot of cowboy stuff being done out there. I mean, neuroscience overall, it's a new science, and we don't know that much about the brain. So it is kind of iffy. Can you use these studies or can't you?
Lona Frank is a neurobiologist and author of the book Mindfield: How Brain Science is Changing Our World.